It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast on a Tuesday. Dan Lobby and Mary Kay Cabot, the Hey MK edition of the podcast, our post-draft edition here. The Browns, of course, adding some talent in the draft. They just signed a center today as well, and Brian Allen. But we are going to start with a move they made today, Mary Kay, with one of their current players. And that, of course, is picking up Greg Newsom's fifth-year option. So now he's making a little bit over $13 million guaranteed for the 2025 season. They have control of him now for 2 years. And we're going to start with our guy Mavro in Cbus, who I actually said this out loud to no one in particular, maybe my dog or something, when I was copying and pasting this from our texters. I said, Mavro is always so topical. He's always the guy that comes through with these for us. So Mavro wants to know, hey, Mary Kay, good to see Newsom get an extension. Now, will they try to negotiate a long-term contract? And what would it take for the Browns to prevent him from testing free agency?
Well, it's a really good question, but now they actually have 2 years to sort of set the market price for Greg Newsom. Maybe they won't take those two full years, but it is an opportunity to see how everything goes this year. And then also, if they want to, he's under contract for 2025 at this $13.4 million. So they could watch him play in 2025 before deciding if they want to commit the blockbuster contract to him. So it's really a win-win situation. If he plays really well over these next 2 years, he gets paid in a big way, and yet also the Browns have the opportunity to kind of slow play it a little bit if they want to. So we'll see what they do. We know that he is one of Andrew Berry's first round picks, one of only two first round picks that he's been able to take in his tenure so far here as GM. And both of them got their fifth year options picked up. Neither of them has, of course, an extension yet. I'm talking about Jed Wills Jr. and now Greg. So it's an opportunity for the Browns to see how it goes a little bit before deciding on the big deal.
This is going to be really interesting to see how this goes, because obviously Martin Emerson getting added into the mix makes this more complicated, because he's your other outside corner that pushes Greg into the slot. And I would imagine that after this season, we're going to be talking about a Martin Emerson extension potentially, because he'll be through his third season. He'll be eligible. You're already paying Denzel Ward, one of the highest paid corners in the league. He might still be the highest paid by yearly average. If not, he's close.
Second.
I haven't checked. Second highest now. Mm-hmm. So he's making a lot of money. You know, Martin on an extension as an outside corner would have to make a lot of money. So I wonder where this all kind of goes for Greg. It feels like if he wants to stay here long term, he might have to take a little bit of a discount, which he might do because he said he's wanted to be a Cleveland Brown for his career. So maybe he would, but it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Well, it is very interesting because, as we know, Greg Newsom has not really embraced, although he did last year for the most part, he hasn't loved the idea of playing in the slot. And I think part of that is because traditionally the bigger money cornerbacks are the outside guys. And yes, Denzel Ward is number two with an average of $20.1 million. That is his yearly average. And right now, Greg will only be getting $13.4 million in 2025, when, of course, all of those numbers will go up. And I'm sure he's probably thinking, geez, I wonder what I would have gotten had I played on the outside these past 2 years, where you can really kind of plant your flag, make a name for yourself, and it's more of the marquee position for a cornerback. So we'll have to see how that goes. But he seems reasonably happy. You actually talked to him at a flag football event at Berea Mid Park High School just 2 weeks ago. And that's where he reiterated that he feels really good here. He wants to be here for the long haul. So I don't know. I guess it's probably a chance for both sides to just see where this goes over the next two seasons.
So right now, looking at over the cap yearly average, his salary would be just ahead of Jamel Dean as far as cornerbacks is concerned, which would actually make him the 11th highest paid cornerback in the league on yearly average. Obviously, that's when he gets to that fifth year option.
Right
now, that's going to change by 2025. That might be 15th or 18th or something. But that's still a lot of money for a slot, and I think that's why this is going to be. This could be a very complicated negotiation when the time comes. But I also think it's a good thing that they have sort of 2 years to play this all out.
Yeah, and not only do they have the fifth-year option at their disposal, but let's say, for instance, they're not ready to pull the trigger on a blockbuster deal even during the season next year. If they needed to, they could also franchise him. Now, they probably wouldn't do that because the price tag by then for the top cornerbacks in the league is probably going to be more than they would want to pay him on a franchise tender. But they have options. If they want to keep him and they're not ready to commit long term yet, they could do something like that. But in a perfect world, Greg will go out there, he'll rock it this season, and they'll sign him to that blockbuster contract at some point before he becomes a free agent.
So we always talk about Greg Newsom's future and, you know, well, what could they have traded him or not this offseason? Is Greg Newsom on this team in 2025 even? Is there a chance, like, is this a guarantee that he will be on the roster in 2025? Or is there a chance that this could change, you know, over the next year?
Well, nothing is guaranteed, but one thing we have learned about Andrew, and we've learned a lot by now, we know his tendencies, we know his trends, his likes and dislikes. We know he loves to build strong through the trenches, the offensive lineman, the defensive lineman, and he loves him some cornerbacks. There's no question about it. So I don't think the plan right now is to trade Greg Newsom. I think they want to stock up on as many good cornerbacks as they can. He's getting better and better in the slot now that he really has embraced it a little bit more than he initially did in 2022. And if he continues on this current trajectory, then I do think there is a chance that he could stick around long term. But they will have options because they keep adding to the room. As we saw this past weekend, they drafted another cornerback. They drafted Miles Harden in the 7th round, and he's got some really nice traits. And we know that Cam Mitchell came along very nicely last season, and he'll probably take another step up. As you mentioned, Martin Emerson, if he keeps going the way that he has been, he could end up in a Pro Bowl before too long. So I think it's all still to be determined. But I do think that they really, really still like Greg a lot.
And the reality is, you know, obviously, we love to talk about it on pods. We love to write about it. Sports Talk loves to talk about it. But this is a good problem for the Browns to have. It's sort of like the tackle situation we keep talking about. And at some point, like I've said before, it does feel like something's going to have to give there. And probably at some point with these three corners, something's going to have to give. It might be 2 or 3 years down the road. But it's not a bad problem to have too many corners right now. You can afford them all. Like you said, Greg has been happier in his role. So you have two good outside corners. You have guys who can play in the slot, and Greg and Cam Mitchell, and you know, maybe Harden becomes a guy like that too. I don't know. I'm sure Andrew Berry's sitting in his office thinking, sign me up for this kind of problem. I'll take it, especially this year.
Yes, exactly. And when you look at it, once again, we always say, oh, you know, there's two starting cornerbacks. The truth of the matter is, now, it's not like this with the tackles, but with the cornerbacks, there really are three starting cornerbacks for the most part. Because if you add up the nickel and dime reps and the amount of plays per game that you have at least three cornerbacks on the field at the same time, it's more than what you have in your base defense with two cornerbacks, two outside corners. So that nickel defense where Martin and Denzel are on the outside and Greg is over the slot receiver. That happens most of the time. So he really is essentially a starter. And I think that's one of the things that Jim Schwartz really sold him on, is that in his version of the nickel defense, that Greg was going to be showcased, that he was going to be playing over some of the best receivers in the NFL. I think that's proven to be true, and it probably will be even more so this coming year. And I just think that he's very valuable and considered a starter.
Okay, let's talk quarterbacks here, and let's start with a question about DTR. And I know one of the things you wrote off the draft was the Browns, why the Browns didn't take a quarterback in this last draft. This question comes from Paul in Cuyahoga Falls. Hey, Mary Kay, I've been impressed by the Browns' approach to loading up the QB room with quality veterans who have experience starting and winning games in the league. Given the talent in the room, it's starting to feel like DTR might be the odd man out. Do you get the same sense, or do you think he has a legitimate chance to beat out Tyler Huntley and make the opening day roster?
It's a great question, but I will tell you, they were so excited about Dorian Thompson-Robinson when they drafted him in the fifth round last year out of UCLA. Then, of course, he suffered the hip injury, and it seemed like he was going to be on the mend for a long time this offseason, and that it didn't seem like it was going all that well. But he did turn the corner in the last couple of weeks, the last month or so. And now the picture has changed there, to the point where he is going to probably get on the field at some point during OTAs, perhaps. And if not OTAs, which are those 10 practices in May, then he does have a good chance of seeing some action in the mandatory mini camp in June and then in training camp. So things have changed for Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and they really, really like him a lot. Now, having an opportunity to sign a Tyler Huntley came out of the woodwork. Tyler thought that he was going to Pittsburgh until they signed both Russell Wilson and acquired Justin Fields. So that one was sort of a bonus signing, and they're going to have to decide what to do, because they will have a surplus if everybody is healthy. I don't know if DTR is going to be the odd man out, because once again, he's a draft pick, someone that they really liked the traits of, and they really wanted to develop him. So it will be, I think, somewhat of an interesting battle between Tyler and DTR. But look what happened last year. It looked like Joshua Dobbs and DTR were kind of hashing it out a little bit for who's sticking around and who's going, and they were able to trade Joshua Dobbs and get something for him. That same thing could happen with Tyler Huntley.
So I did a way, way, way too early 53-man roster, and it's way, way too early to talk about practice squad spots. But one of the things I did decide to do, and this was more just so I could give myself a number at another position, was I decided to just keep two quarterbacks, which the Browns have done. They actually did it last year. Just keep two quarterbacks, and then you get one through to the practice squad. So maybe that's what happens with Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I don't think they're going to give up on him, though. We know Andrew doesn't like to give up on picks, and especially a quarterback who's barely played that they really liked. I just don't think they're going to give up on that guy. But I do wonder how the Tyler Huntley DTR dynamic plays out. If Tyler could become a trade chip, if they could both end up on the practice squad, I don't know. But I mean, there will be one quarterback. If they don't keep three on the roster, there will be one on the practice squad for sure. And, you know, that could be DTR.
It could be. If they feel like they can keep him that way, then they will strongly consider doing that. They might have to put him on the 53 if they definitely want to keep him. And then, as far as Tyler Huntley is concerned, depending on what he shows in training camp, in practice, how he runs the new sort of Ken Dorsey vibe offense, that will go a long way towards determining which quarterbacks stick around and which ones end up on the practice squad or whatever. But I do think there is a slight chance that Tyler could be one of those guys where somebody is willing to offer you something for a really, really good backup quarterback.
Yeah. If you sign a guy that was essentially the vet minimum, and then you get even a fifth round pick for him, that's not bad. You could do a lot worse than that, because you know he's not going to start for you. You know he's not going to be your backup. So you can certainly do a lot worse. Another quarterback question, and this is about the big one. John from Fort Pierce, Florida. And we get questions about Deshaun Watson kind of like this a lot. So he says, hey, Mary Kay, How long of a leash will they give Deshaun Watson before they simply admit this didn't work out? Except for the Watson trade, the current organization is looked upon as doing great things. As in any organization, you're either improving or backsliding, and he's afraid 2024 could be the latter for the Browns. So, again, the simple way to ask that was the first part of it. How long is the leash on Deshaun Watson, and what's it going to take for them to decide that it's not going to work?
Well, I think the first thing to keep in mind is the fact that the Browns have the bar set high for this season, regardless of who the quarterback is. And last year, the ship kept sailing along even after Deshaun Watson suffered the fractured shoulder. And of course, they got Joe Flacco to come in here and get them to the playoffs. If for some reason Deshaun Watson isn't the quarterback they expect him to be, if he's not that guy, then they will try Jameis Winston and turn it over to him. Because the bottom line is, they're trying to win games. They're not going to let down the rest of the football team to have a long leash on someone. The bar is set at winning games, throwing touchdowns, avoiding interceptions, and keeping this team in the playoff hunt. If he's not doing that, he'll be treated like anybody else, because they're not going to sacrifice this season or this football team just in the name of, oh, we spent 3 first-round picks on this guy and $230 million. That's not how it's going to go. They'll do whatever it takes to win the game, and whichever quarterback gives them the best chance to do that is who is going to be playing. Now, having said all that, they do not foresee a problem with Deshaun Watson at all, from a health standpoint or from a performance standpoint. They feel 100% that he is poised and ready to go out there and have an excellent season. And that is the mindset inside that building.
I think that's the key point, because, you know, our texter John obviously does not agree with that. He doesn't view it the same way the Browns do. He sounds like he's out on Deshaun Watson. The Browns very much are not. And I don't think it's just them saying the right things. They went out and they changed their offensive staff. They bring in Ken Dorsey. We've talked about the quarterbacks he's worked with. They go out and they trade for Jerry Jeudy. They traded for Elijah Moore last year to beef up that receiving core. Everything the Browns are doing is telling you they still believe Deshaun can be, even if it's not the guy from Houston, a quarterback that you can win a lot of football games with. So while some fans might disagree, and certainly John, our texter, disagrees, that's just not how the Browns see it right now. But that said, that could change if the injury comes back or if he's just not the same player.
Well, I think the other thing to keep in mind here is the fact that I think a lot of fans are remembering how Deshaun looked last season. And we've basically come to find out now that there is at least a chance that he suffered the fracture or some more extensive damage in his shoulder when he took that big hit in week 3. He was never right after that. And apparently his surgeon has told him that it is possible that maybe something started all the way back then. Maybe it was a hairline fracture that went undetected in there or something along those lines. But I think people are sort of still judging him on last season. I mean, when you think of that Colts game, how horrible was that when he tried to go out there and play in the Colts game? But then we come to find out he probably still didn't have it. He did not have a healthy shoulder in that game or really any other game after week 3. So I think everyone has to keep that in mind. That wasn't the Deshaun Watson that they should expect to see this year if the surgery went the way everybody believes that it did. The other thing is some people don't want to give Deshaun Watson the benefit of the doubt, and that's never going to change. We've known that from day one, and that is just going to be part of his narrative moving forward. He's probably going to have to win a Super Bowl before some people are willing to give him the benefit of any doubt from a professional standpoint.
And I do wonder what would have happened had his season not ended after that Baltimore game, and had he come back and played pretty well against what was a pretty soft schedule down the stretch. I wonder if people would have been leaning a little more towards, okay, we feel better about this, because I was starting to feel it turn a little bit, right? Those performances against Tennessee where he looked pretty good, and then Arizona. And then of course you have Baltimore. It felt like it was starting to turn in his favor. And then he's gone for the year. And Joe Flacco comes in and plays great. And it just sort of fueled this idea that, man, why did the Browns have to go get this guy, right? With all that baggage and give up all those picks and all that. So he's kind of got to claw his way back just to that level again. But we've seen it time and again. If you play well, if you win a bunch of games, if you win a Super Bowl, people are willing to forget a lot of things. And I'm with you. I think if he takes this team to those heights, then we're going to stop getting these questions, obviously.
Yeah. And you know what? There's another thing, and we've never really talked about this to any great extent, but maybe it bears discussing right here. I also think, and I do get a number of emails about this, I do think that some people out there still would like to hear Deshaun admit that he did some things wrong and that he owes some people, he owes the massage therapists an apology, and that he should come out and discuss that he had to change and that counseling changed him and that he made mistakes. I think if there was some mea culpa involved, that he could get some people back on the bandwagon that want to hear him say that he did some things wrong and that he's deeply, gravely sorry for those things. And so we'll see if that ever happens. I don't know if it will, but I do think that it would go a long way towards rebuilding relationships with the fans here.
I agree. I think that was there when they first made the moves. Like, and there was ongoing litigation, right? I mean, I guess there still is. There's still two suits outstanding, but at the time there were a lot more than that. So I think it was hard for him to really say much. But there's definitely, whenever he's talked about it, just been this idea of he's the victim and he didn't do anything wrong. And I agree with you. There has to be some way for him to kind of toe that line where if he doesn't want to just come out and admit that he did anything wrong, and maybe again, he doesn't believe he did, there's probably some way he can address that and handle that would make people say, okay, it seems like this guy's grown. It seems like he's learned from some mistakes. And again, the counseling element of it too. Like, tell us a little bit about those counseling sessions and what you learned and how those helped you grow, because all indications are that those were beneficial for him. And I think he's even talked about that to some extent. So I think there's a way that he could address it, and maybe the people around him could push him towards that, but I don't know. I don't know how you do that. I don't know the venue to do that, but I think I agree with you. I think that would go a long way towards winning people over again.
Yeah. And you know what I think is going to be very helpful to him this year is to have Jameis Winston here with him. And who knows, maybe those two will have a lot of heart. I'm sure those guys are going to have a lot of heart-to-heart talks about this situation. I think that Jameis is going to be someone that Deshaun Watson can confide in and talk to about this. And maybe something positive will come out of it in the way of an acknowledgement of something down the road. I don't know. I don't know any of this, but like I said, I do think that there is a large segment of the population, and I'm going on feedback that I get in texts and emails and things like that, where people want to hear him say something along those lines of the growth, the change, learned, made mistakes, made, you know, paid dues and that sort of thing. So we'll have to see how that plays out over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and Jameis is a great example because obviously all the things that happened at Florida State, the accusations there, and then, you know, other things that happened that resulted in him facing a suspension there. And then, of course, he was suspended in the NFL. And now he's turned himself into this great, like, dynamic leader, and his teammates love him. And he's like, when you hear him talk, you can just sense it, right? So I think that I agree with you. I think that's going to be good to have Jameis in that room, because that's a guy that it's not like Jameis has ever stood up and said and just gone through a litany of things he did or didn't do wrong, but he just sort of changed who he was and changed how he approached people. And the person he's become has been really, really impressive.
Yes, it really is. He's a tremendous speaker. He is in many ways, I mean, I don't know if he's formally a preacher, but I see him, preaching, and he's become very religious. And I know he helps a lot of young men. And I do think that he is going to have a positive impact on Deshaun. And I think that that was part of the method to the Browns madness here.
Okay, quick break. And then we are going to get to a couple of draft picks from last year.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And welcome back to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Dan Lobby, Mary Kay Cabot, the Hey Mary Kay edition of the podcast. Let's start with Dan in DC. Hey Mary Kay, thinking about the wide receiver room, we know the Browns like Zed Tillman, but what's your take? For all the receivers we've seen come and go, have you seen enough to think their confidence is warranted, or do we not know yet?
We do not know yet. Sometimes these rookies take a very big step up into their second season. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. The old personnel adage is that you want to see them get about 25% better. Now, how do you grade that? How do you quantify that? I don't really know how you would say, oh yeah, he's 25% better. But I do think that that is the expectation. And first of all, I think that they believe all of the receivers will be better when they have the continuity at quarterback and that they have Deshaun Watson throwing the ball to them from game one all the way through the playoffs. So I think that should help. And then I think that Cedric Tillman just needs to continue to learn how to be a pro, to learn how to study, to work harder, to know his routes and his assignments. And this year, that might even be a little bit more important because, as we talked about yesterday, when they're going to be running some different choice routes and having some a different philosophy and vibe in some respects with Ken Dorsey at the helm and maybe even calling the plays. It almost feels to me like it's trending towards that way. With Ken Dorsey sort of running the show a little bit more on offense, he's going to have to be super, super vigilant about route running, about what the defender is doing, how they're playing him. Because again, they will have these choice routes that they can run depending on the leverage of the defender and how he's playing them. Going to have to be a lot of communication, a lot of studying, your opponent. I mean, if you're going to be making those kinds of decisions, you better know what the tendencies of the guy covering you are going to be. So there's going to have to be a big step up in terms of work ethic and studying and getting in that playbook and getting on that jugs machine and doing all the things that you need to do. In order to be a quality pro at receiver, the amount of work that you have to put in is always twice what these guys think it is. And the great ones, the absolute great ones, the Jerry Rices of the world and the Amari Coopers, and when Jarvis Landry was here, these guys are tireless in their workout regimen and their efforts to get better. In the offseason, you see them working out at all these places and doing all the footwork and running all the routes and catching passes, just a million passes on the jugs machine. That's what it's going to take. And if he's willing to work that hard, then I think in this season, you will see that 25% jump.
Yeah, I still think there's something there with Tillman. And obviously, his rookie season wasn't great. There were some bad signs. I didn't always love what I saw. But he's still got size. If he can separate a little bit, that'll help. If he gets used to playing with Deshaun Watson, that'll help. So I just think a guy like Tillman with some of the physical traits he's got, you're going to give some time to. And Alex Wright, now obviously Alex Wright is different because he came from a really small school and that was a huge leap for him, but he did almost nothing his rookie year. Like after his rookie year, it was kind of like, I don't know if this guy's going to be much. And then last year he took a nice little step and he still has some work to do, but he at least showed something. So if Cedric Tillman can, if we can leave this season thinking, all right, Cedric Tillman, there's something there. That's not a super high bar to clear. And I think he could certainly do it. He's got the ability, I think.
I think so too. I think the difficulty this year with Cedric Tillman is it might be tricky to get the reps that he's looking for, right? Because they went out and they traded for Jerry Jeudy, and Jerry Jeudy is going to be the number two receiver. And then Elijah Moore is going to be the number three and in the slot. And you've got Amari Cooper. Then you've got also David Bell that's going to need and want some playing time. And they also use some of their tight ends basically as receivers. So David Njoku is still probably going to get maybe the second amount of targets on the team, if not second, then third. So it could be tricky for said to get the reps that he needs to take that jump and make that development, but it's there for him. It's there in front of him and he can do it. Of course, David Bell is going to be trying to do the same thing. And Michael Woods is coming back off of an Achilles. If he makes the team, he's also going to be trying to prove that he belongs out there. And now you've got Jamari Thrash, who has these choice route traits of the ability to run really good routes, the football acumen to make great, great decisions, good hands, good quickness, somebody that can probably do that role for you and might actually be better suited to it than some of the other guys that you even have on the team now. So it will be very interesting to see how this plays out.
All right. Another question about a draft pick from last year. This comes from the 513 area code. Hey, Mary Kay, based on the number of defensive tackles the Browns signed or took in the draft, do you think Siaki Ika is in trouble to make the roster based on his performance last year?
I actually don't think so, because we must remember that Siaki Ika is a nose tackle. And when you look at Michael Hall coming in, he's a three technique. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday on the pod as well. So those two guys are not competing. Mike coming in here does not inform Siaki's playing time. Siaki's going to have to carve out a niche for himself in his own right, independent of what's going on for the most part at the three technique. And I don't know how he's going to do that. I mean, they've got Dalvin Tomlinson. Now they've got at the three technique, they also have Quentin Jefferson, they've got Maurice Hurst, they've got Shelby Harris, who can play nose and three. So it's a crowded field. It's a crowded field, but I don't think that the addition of Quentin and Mike and the return of Mo is necessarily going to impact Siaki.
Okay, we haven't had stadium talk in a while, so let's do a little stadium talk because we got a question. Paxton Stiles, Cheverly, Maryland. Hey, Mary Kay, if the Browns decide to renovate the stadium, where would they play until completion of the project? And this is relevant because just this week we come to find out that the Browns met with state lawmakers and they would like, this is actually from Jeremy Pelzer's story on cleveland.com. They want taxpayers to foot half the bill for either a proposed $2.4 billion domed stadium in Brook Park or a $1 billion renovation of their existing stadium in downtown Cleveland. And that's according to sources for Jeremy. So I guess the first question with Paxton, I think from what has been gathered, the Browns wouldn't play elsewhere during a renovation, correct? If they renovated the stadium, they would do it in such a way where they would still be able to play there.
Yes, and it kind of boggles my mind that they would be able to do that, because I've seen the plans for the $1 billion renovation, and it is fabulous. I mean, it is a stadium that Cleveland Browns fans would be very, very excited to go to and very proud of to have there on the lakefront. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's open to the lake. You can see the lake through different areas of the stadium. And it looks like a state-of-the-art facility, even though it's really only a renovation. Somehow they plan to stay in it when they are renovating. And I don't know how they're going to do that. I'm thinking about putting a little family room on, and I don't even know if I can live here through that. Yeah, I don't know how that's going to happen, but that is the current plan. And as far as the Dome Stadium, obviously they would just continue to play where they're at until that is done.
Yeah, I think that's one thing fans should understand is the renovations are really cool. Like the stuff they want to do, I mean, it looks awesome. Like I wish they would just show people, but they haven't yet. But it looks really, like, you would love it. The only The only issue is it's not going to have a roof. But other than that, the renovations they have planned would make that stadium, I don't know, 100 times better, 1,000 times better. It would completely change it. And I'm with you. I don't know how they would play there in the process of doing that, but I don't know. Somebody who makes more money than me can figure that out, I guess. You know, as far as this Brook Park thing, it still just kind of seems to be building momentum. You know, they're, like I said, they're meeting with state lawmakers now, and they're starting to talk about funding and all of that. So I don't know. This still seems murky, but it does seem like there's two clear options. It's going to end up being one of those two. You know, we've talked on here that honestly, if they're going to do this and spend all that money, they probably have to put a dome on it, which is hard for me to say, but it's true. I don't know. I feel like we're going to start getting answers soon. We have to, but it's also still very much up in the air, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, I think from a time frame standpoint, I really think that I remember when we talked to Jimmy Haslam about it at the owners' meetings last month, he said that they would like to make a decision on the renovation or the dome by the end of this year. That's what they're hoping they can do. And maybe they need a little bit more time, but the sand is going through the hourglass very quickly on this whole thing, because as we know, the lease is up in 2028. Now they can extend that probably if they have to. They can work something out because time is a wasting. But yes, it's very interesting to see what's going on with both possible options. And you know, as an entity at Cleveland.com, we are basically taking the position that they are working towards renovating the stadium. And that's kind of our take on the whole thing, is that is ultimately going to be what happens and what we need to be focusing on.
Again, a part of me, as much as I hate the idea of just every football game being indoors and looking the same, it just seems like it would almost be best for all parties to just build a dome in Brook Park, clear that space where the stadium is now, and, you know, hopefully the city could do something with that finally. But who knows? I'm not a city planner. But, well, so, I mean, like we said, those renovations. Being on the lake is also very cool. And it's very unique, and it's something we hear a lot of people talk about as well. So if that's where this ends up, with them staying on the lake in a beautifully new renovated stadium that is still open air, I honestly don't think anybody would really complain too much about that.
No, I don't think so at all. And as they move forward, who knows? I mean, maybe by then something could happen with Burke Lakefront Airport. It just got too late to do anything about that. I don't even know if that would have been a feasible site if they were able to use that. But it's complicated, and I don't know where it's going to end up. But again, I do think fans will end up loving the renovation if that's what it turns out to be.
Okay, there we go. Our Hey MK edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Those questions from our Football Insider subscribers who also get texts. Go to cleveland.com/browns. Click the blue banner at the top of the page there to get info on that and get signed up. Find us on Instagram at Orange and Brown Talk, on YouTube. Search Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com. And of course, just make sure you're following this podcast or subscribed on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you want to leave us a 5-star review over on Apple, we'd certainly appreciate that as well. Mary Kay, I'll talk to you later.
Sounds great.